reached the lowest point in my career, perhaps in my entire life. But something kept me from giving up. Perhaps it was the desperate need of the colored people and the gratitude in their faces that made me want to keep going. Or maybe it was the determination and grit that I had inherited from my father and mother. Whatever the reason, I dried my eyes and looked to God and the future. And soon, things began to look better.
I'm feeling much better, Edson. In a few weeks, I'll be able to travel, I'm sure.
We must give the malaria ample time to heal, Emma. But I think you're right. I, too, am feeling better. And I have another piece of good news. A committee appointed by the General Conference has decided to make restitution for the money losses sustained by the Gospel Primer.
That is wonderful news, husband.
And that's not all. They have decided to give us a share of money collected by the Gospel Schools. So, a pretty good understanding has been reached by all. In early February, after a profitable summer in Battle Creek, Emma and I returned to Mississippi. Because of the influence of Brother Alvin, the colored people around Vicksburg and Yazoo City were now more ready to accept us and our message. But the situation between coloreds and whites in the Delta was worse than when we had left.
While you were in Battle Creek, there had been several incidents of cross-burning, and I heard that some colored families were run out of the area. I tell you, Elder White, something dreadful is going to happen. I feel it in my bones.
Brother Fred, we can expect tensions such as these at times, but I don't feel the plantation owners will try anything drastic.
But it's really not the owners who are causing the trouble. It's mostly the middle-class white townspeople. They feel the colored people are becoming too prosperous.
Too prosperous? Oh, that's absurd. The colored farmer is perhaps the poorest, most destitute man in this country. Mm-hmm. Too preposterous indeed. I wrote an article in the Gospel Herald why it was impossible for the colored farmer to succeed as well as his white counterpart. The high rent of ravaged land, the price of food and supplies, twice that which the white farmer pays, the deplorable remuneration that the colored man received for his crops. The white businessmen and rich farmers did not care at all for my observations. They blamed the colored leaders who had accepted the truth and went looking for a scapegoat.
What y'all want coming to a man's house in the middle of the night and scaring his family half to death?
You've been hanging around with them Adventists, ain't you?
So? Adventists are good folk. They come down here trying to help colored people. Now listen, I know you, Virgil Dawson. Even if your face is covered up with that hood, now I want all of you to get off my property.
Woo-wee! You sure got uppity of late, ain't you? Must be that crazy Adventist preaching. Well, now, maybe you need to be taught another kind of lesson. Abner, you got that bull whip?
Yeah, I sure have. And it's all ready and waiting for the taste of somebody's backside. I wonder who.
Now, just a minute now. Now, whipping went out with slavery more than 40 years ago.
You're mighty right, but we're reviving it tonight, yeah. Starting with you.
Yeah. Hey, kid boy, don't let him get away.
He got him right in the middle of a circle. He can't get away now.
What are you waiting for, Abner? Use that bull whip. Woo! Go.
I met Brother Alvin the next day on a Vicksburg street. Good morning, Brother Alvin. Are you going possum hunting with that rifle?
I'm going hunting all right, Elder White. But it ain't for no possum. Lesson you ever saw a possum with two legs.
What do you mean, Brother Alvin?
Last night, I was visited at my cabin by some members of the local Ku Klux Klan. Now here, Elder White, take a look at my back.
Oh, my. Your back is cut to ribbons. A bloody mess. How many of them were there?
Maybe a dozen of them. I could have took care of one or two, but a dozen was too many for me. And I'll take care of them with this, though.
A rifle is not the way to do this, brother. Remember, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to help him. Them white men are going to pay for cutting me up with that bullwhip and causing my family to be scared nigh unto death and hunting my wife.
What good will it do your family if you shoot any of those Klansmen? You'll just stir up trouble for all the colored folks around here and wind up in jail for murder. And the denomination will be in trouble, too, and God knows we've got enough of that already.
You're all right. I'll do what you say. But I tell you, Elder White, I ain't gonna take it no more.
I finally got the rifle away from the giant colored man. A few days later, Brother Alvin moved out of the area to avoid further trouble. But the poor man's difficulties were just beginning. A month or two later, a man who hated colored people gave a Vicksburg newspaper a false report that Brother Alvin had murdered a small colored boy. Without investigating the story fully, the paper printed the story as fact with headlines that shouted, "Fiendish murder of a little Negro boy by a Negro man." On the strength of the story, Alvin was arrested and held without bail. With much danger to myself, I visited Brother Alvin in jail.
Here's that Negro Alvin's cell, Mr. White. Y'all got 10 minutes.
Elder White, am I glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you too, Brother Alvin. But I'm sorry it has to be under these circumstances. How are they treating you?
Just like any other colored man. Real bad.
They're saying in the press that you took up with a colored woman with a child, leaving your wife and family.
Elder White, you know better than to believe that. I just farm my plot of ground and mind my own business.
But there was a child.
Well, there was a child, all right, a little boy, sir, who was sick and half-starved to death. And I took him in and treated him like one of my own children.
But he did die.
Yes, sir, he died, but not by my hands. You see, he got the smallpox and
dysentery?
That the word? Well, one day he's lying out on the porch, getting fresh air. And I'd been a little under the weather myself and was to bed in the house. Now, I hear the boy. He tried to get up, but he must have got dizzy or something. And he fall 5 feet off that porch and hit his head on a big iron washtub. I tried to get a doctor to come, but he wouldn't, because I ain't have no money. The boy, he died that same night.
So that's what happened. What does your lawyer say?
Hold on, why? I got no lawyer.
Well, we'll get you one. The court has now set bail at $1,500, and I'm going to try to raise it and get you out of here until your trial. You can stay aboard the Morning Star until then. On the day that my colored brother went to trial, some of the jury members were the very men who had horsewhipped him so unmercifully. Realizing that without a corroborating witness, his trial was already lost, the colored man accepted the prosecutor's offer to plead to a lesser charge of manslaughter.
The prisoner will stand. N.W. Alvin, you've been convicted of manslaughter, and I now sentence you to 10 years at hard labor in the Mississippi Penitentiary. Have you anything to say before you're taken away?
Your Honor, I swear before God that I ain't had nothing to do with that poor boy's death. Now, my friend and pastor here, Elder White, can you
take him away, bailiff?
Elder White!
Don't worry, Brother Alvin. I'll find you and help you.
Try as I might, I was never able to find out what finally happened to that valiant colored man who had paid so much for accepting the faith and the Bible Sabbath. But in spite of these kind of setbacks, the work continued to prosper in the Delta region under Fred Halliday. The feeling grew within me that I had done all I could in the Vicksburg and Yazoo City area. I had no faith that I should retire to Battle Creek either. I felt there must be some place where I could raise the standard of truth and build up the work among the colored people. My mind was now directed to Nashville, Tennessee, a city midway between North and South, a place where my health would better endure the climate. That summer in Battle Creek, I talked of my plan with my old friend, Will Palmer.
You've lost weight, Edson. Are you taking good care of yourself?
As good as I can, Will. A persistent bout of malaria is bringing me down. That is why I've decided to take the morning start in Nashville to continue our work.
Well, that sounds like a good plan. But you are worried about something. We've been friends too long for me not to notice. What's the matter?
You're right, old friend. I am worried. Very worried.
You've always been a worrier. Ever since we started the Southern work years ago. Now what's troubling you now?
Someone has published a book suspiciously similar to my book, The Coming King. Similar. It's almost a direct copy in size and content. And it's being sold for a price much less than my book.
Well, can't you do anything about it?
Not a thing. And to compound the problem, another person, and I won't name him, he claims he is the author of The Coming King.
Why, no one will believe such a ridiculous tale.
Nevertheless, all this is cut into the sale of my books, and you know how badly the Southern work needs these royalties.
When will you take the morning start in Nashville?
In the autumn of 1899. The Cumberland River is plenty deep for navigation, as you know. I've written letters to various people around the Nashville area, and the racial problems seem much less intense there.
It sounds like it will be a splendid place to continue your labors, my friend.
I wish you could be there with me, Will. Just like the old days.
I wish I could be there, too, but I'm afraid my missionary days are over, old friend. But go, with my best wishes and God's blessing.
In 1900, Mother had returned to the United States from Australia. In March, she traveled to Vicksburg to dedicate the new church. Then she traveled to Nashville to visit me and to attend the convention of the Southern Missionary Society. She then returned to Battle Creek, where she made a strong appeal before the General Conference for the entire work in the South. She called for reorganization of the General Conference, and when Mother spoke, everybody listened. Although I didn't realize it, the work of the Morning Star was almost finished. But there was one more important trip left in the old girl. On June 8, 1904, the Star steamed from Nashville with a most distinguished party.
Oh, Edson, I do love traveling on water. I always have. The scenery is so lovely as we slip between the banks of this calm river. Ah, so lovely. Your father would have loved this trip.
I'm glad you're enjoying the ride, Mother.
I am indeed. The rest and peace are doing me a world of good.
I hope that Percy McGann and Edward Sutherland are enjoying the trip as much as you are. I haven't seen either of them today.
They left the boat at our last docking place.
Oh? Why is that?
They are searching for a place to build a school. They have worked so hard, those two, searching everywhere.
Well, there's a lot of prime land around here in Tennessee, and much of it is almost ridiculously inexpensive. I'm sure they'll find something.
You have a splendid boat here, Edson. You should be proud of the Morning Star and the work you have done.
Thank you, Mother.
Will she ever cruise the Mississippi River again?
I just don't know. The Star is an old lady now, and her work is almost done.
Well, son, some of us old ladies have a lot of life in us yet.
In Mother's case, she was to have almost a dozen more productive years. But not my beloved Morning Star. In 1905, she sank. Mother suggested that she should be raised and pulled up on shore as a memorial for the role she played in starting the Advent movement in the South. Eventually, I did raise the aging hulk and place it under some trees in the front of my house to serve as an office. Not long after, the morning star burned to the ground.
The boiler of the Morning Star was sent to Riverside Hospital in Nashville, where it continued to serve black Americans for years. The metal star, which was the boat's emblem, and the ship's bell were presented to Oakwood College. Edson White's work was not quite done. He established a publishing house, which later became the Southern Publishing Association. But as time went on, he seemed to find it more and more difficult to handle his business affairs. He became crotchety and hard to get along with. There is no doubt that his best years were those spent on the Mississippi, opening Adventism to the Deep South. Edson White died in Marshall, Michigan in 1929. But the work he started went on and prospered, although there is still much to be done. As Ellen White admonished,
"The black man's name is written in the book of life beside the white man's. All are one in Christ. Birth, station, nationality, or color cannot elevate or degrade a man. Only character makes the man. Those who slight a brother because of his color are slighting Christ."